Hi, welcome to the Eco News Report, the weekly radio program of the North Coast Environmental Center. We are your hosts, Kirk Cahoon
and David Narum,
and of Greenway Partners. On today's show, we will be discussing the role of innovation in dealing with environmental problems that seem to have no solution. Our guest today will be Peter Lehman of the Schatz Energy Research Center.
The issue of innovation is, well, actually, the concept of innovation has become quite popular throughout the nation and the world. We've decided to focus the series looking at innovation because of the importance of innovation in terms of transitioning, and innovations allow us to transition.
Peter Lehman is one example of a local innovator that we find very common throughout the Redwood region. We are very fortunate to live in an area that has a large number of innovative projects and ideas.
Innovation seems to be a term that people all kind of have a sense of what it means, but nobody can really pin it down. You know, innovation, we think of a technology like a product, like an iPod, or we think of a process, that's an innovative way of thinking. And I've done a lot of work recently sort of trying to figure out what this word innovation means. And the best definition that I've come across is simply good ideas that work, which really says two things. One is that an innovation is not just an idea. You can't sit around at home and have an idea and call it an innovation. An innovation is something that is actually put into place in some way, and it adds value. It does something. It makes a change. In today's environmental and economic situation, we're in sort of a place of needing to transition.
And they say, David, that necessity is the mother of invention. So innovations actually come under periods of great stress. In fact, diamond, as you know, is made under great pressure. So perhaps we're sitting at a threshold of great opportunities to deal with environmental issues in a whole new way. That's some of the things that we want to discuss in our hosting of this show.
And one of the things that I think we want to get at, and this is why we want to solicit ideas from you, the listeners, and from our school children and others who may not be listening, is that innovation is something that we all do, that we all can take part in. And in the sense that innovation creates our future and helps us shape the future, it's something that everybody needs to play a role in. So at some point, we will be soliciting school children for ideas for this show, and hopefully actually getting them on as well.
So if you have ideas, please send them to the email address Narum, N-A-R-U-M, at greenwaypartners.net. Once again, that's Narum at greenwaypartners.net. So please send us those innovative ideas, and we will take a deep look at them.
First, another comment I'd like to make is the word eco news and the prefix eco. I don't think it's often clear to people. I was surprised when I found this out, that the eco is the root of the word eco, is Greek, is oikos. And it's the root of the word economy and ecology. It's the same thing. What oikos means is household. And so when we think about ecology, we're looking at the study of the household. And when we look at economy, we're looking at the management of the household. And one of the things I think that we will try to focus on here is the fact that the nature's economy is really something that we might want to mimic as we rethink how we do things in our own human economy.
So the big questions that we will ask through the series is, how can we have both a healthy environment and a healthy economy? So a lot of times people consider these very much at odds with each other, but as we discussed, under these times of uncertainty and turbulence in the world, great opportunities exist out there for dramatic change in these environmental issues.
Yeah, I think often businesses, homeowners, whomever, tends to look at dealing with the environment as an added cost, as something that maybe must be done in some instances, but is done sort of grudgingly. What we'd like to try to show is the value on the other side, on the flip side of the coin, is how you frame the issue, that working with natural systems, tapping into the energy flows that are already there, passive solar energy, solar electric, like Peter Lehman will talk about in a little bit, the things that nature provides for us is freely in many instances is something that it makes a lot of sense and can add a lot of value. And also for businesses who are out there wondering about whether or not to go green, as it might be called, I think that the trend is turning quickly for those that are seeing that environmental concern and sustainability are value drivers, I guess is what they call it in the business world. But it means a lot to customers. Customers are starting to look for that in the businesses they work with and shop at. So I think that we'll be moving ahead with sort of transitioning. One of the questions we'll ask here, given our natural resources that we have here, the human resources that we have, the types of people that have lived here, in some cases for millennia, the technical know-how, as we'll hear in a little bit, the Schatz Lab and the great engineers that are working on energy issues here at Humboldt State, What are the financial resources? All these things. What do our resources tell us about what works best here? We have the term genius loci, the genius of the place. What are the things that we can do best here that nobody else can do? Whether it's energy, whether it's related to how we use our water, our soils, our natural, the skills of our people that are here in many cases that are currently being underutilized because of our economic transition away from sort of a resource intensive economy, resource extraction intensive. One of the ideas that, then we'll move on to our interview with Peter Lehman, but is the idea that, and it's not, this is an idea propounded by former CEO of Mitsubishi, a guy named Tachi Kaiuchi, he's chairman of the Future 500, who talks about business, thinking about business and economies like a rainforest. And basically what his argument is that the rainforest is an innovative organization. It excels by learning to adapt to what it doesn't have. And in many cases, I think we're finding organizations here, whether they're schools or businesses or whatnot, are having to innovate because they have less to work with. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, although we'd like it to change soon. We'd like that innovation to lead to greater resources at some point.
So I'm wondering, David, if you could elaborate a little more about the rainforest and why that would be a good analogy for an innovative business.
Well, what Mr. Kaiuchi talks about is that a rainforest has almost no resources, right? The soil is thin. There are very few nutrients. Really consumes almost nothing. All of the wastes that are produced, maybe like, you know, leaf litter or animal waste, is food for some other organism. And so what he talks about is that the productive cap in a rainforest is actually in the design of how the nutrients are cycled and just the interconnected web. And it really is like an efficient economy the way it works. And I think we can learn a lot from that, the relationships in a rainforest. So he has four design principles. I'll talk about those really briefly and then we can move on. And these are design principles that he would have us apply toward our economies and businesses. First is to get feedback, to understand what's going on. So we know where we are. We know where our material is being cycled, what kind of waste we're producing. We know where our energy is coming from. And in the Schatz lab, as Peter, we're fortunate to have Peter Lehman with us, has done a lot of research locally in terms of what's available. The need to be able to adapt and to change. Natural systems adapt to disturbances and to change. We are in a situation all around the world of an economic disruption that is creating the need to figure out ways to adapt, to change, to move on, to create new sources of value. The third point is differentiation. I mean, every good business owner will want to differentiate their product, but in a natural system, it's the diversity that there's unique niches that each species can fit into. Two species typically don't fit into the same niche, so over the course of time, we have differentiation. That's another way that economies work. And the last one is simply to be a good fit, and that's what I think we're looking at here locally, is what works here that doesn't work anywhere else? What can we take advantage of locally to develop a locally self-reliant, not an island, we're still going to be connected to the world, but a locally self-sufficient economy that really effectively utilizes what we have here freely, almost.
And our guest today, Peter Lehman, will be providing a good example of that exact model that David just discussed when he's discussing what's called the RESCO program.
Today we have with us Dr. Peter Lehman, Professor of Environmental Resources Engineering and Director of the Schatz Energy Research Center on the campus of Humboldt State University in Arcata. The Schatz Center was established in 1989 thanks to funding from Dr. Lewis W. Schatz, then president of the General Plastics Manufacturing Company of Tacoma. Dr. Schatz had a lifelong passion for innovation and the use of hydrogen as a clean energy carrier. Schatz performs research and designs and builds renewable energy systems. It trains students and it educates the public about the advantages of clean and renewable energy technologies. Dr. Lehman, could you tell us about Mr. Schatz and how his innovative vision led to the Schatz Lab as we know it today?
Sure, I'd be pleased. I met Mr. Schatz in the spring of 1989, and that's when things got started here at the Schatz Center. And it was later that he told me the story of how he got interested in hydrogen energy. Evidently, he was doing a high school science project along with one of his sons, and they bought a solar panel and connected it to a homemade electrolyzer and made hydrogen and oxygen the way that most chemistry students do in high school chemistry. They collected the hydrogen in a balloon, and he lit a match under the balloon, and he told me, when that balloon went boom, I knew I was onto something.
So you met Dr. Schatz and engaged in a conversation which led to the development of a funding stream for the Schatz Lab. Could you talk about that just a little bit, please?
Sure. The first project he funded was the Schatz Solar Hydrogen Project, which is still going at our marine lab in Trinidad. And the goal of that project was and still is to demonstrate the use of hydrogen as a way to store solar energy. And he funded that, and that led to other projects. And over the years, he died in 2001 and left us a bequest in his will. And over the years, he contributed $12 million to our efforts here.
I'm guessing that some of our listeners don't understand how an electrolyzer works. Could you explain maybe how you can work with the sun to create hydrogen?
Sure.
Simply.
Electrolysis is a simple process. Most people know that water is H2O. It's hydrogen and oxygen chemically bonded together. And if you pass electricity through water, you have to put a material in it to make the water conductive. But if you pass electricity through water, the energy of the electricity is enough to break the chemical bonds and separate water into its two elements, hydrogen and oxygen. And that's what an electrolyzer does. So you're using the energy in electricity to break the chemical bonds, and you end up with hydrogen, which is a form of stored energy. And then you can use that hydrogen later to recover the electricity if you put it in a fuel cell, or to burn it in a motor and produce motive power. We have a car that runs on hydrogen here at HSU. Any number of ways you can then recover the energy at some time later. So it's a way to store energy, and energy storage is neither cheap nor easy, and it's something that's going to be really important in our energy future.
Now, so Peter, one of the questions that always comes up when you discuss renewable energy systems like wind or solar or whatever is the problem of storage, as you mentioned. And could you describe a little bit how hydrogen could be an alternative to, say, battery storage for remote locations, perhaps, or in the transportation sector?
Well, I think both things will be important. I think that we will use all kinds of energy storage means to moderate out the variability of solar energy and wind energy. So one way you can do it is charge an electric vehicle. If you have electricity available from a solar plant or a wind plant when you don't need it for something else, you can use it to charge up your electric car. Or you can electrolyze water and make hydrogen, which then becomes a fuel for a fuel cell car. Or you can do something like pump water uphill called pump storage. And then when you need the energy, you let the water flow downhill through a turbine and you generate electricity. And we do that. We do that here in California. We have a big pump storage facility in the Sierra just east of Fresno.
So, Peter, there's a lot of these things that are technologies that have been out in the, you know, in the hinterlands for a long time. And those of us in the mainstream community that aren't doing the research like you, we wonder, why aren't these things coming to market? And so it always seems to me, what are the big barriers that are still out there? And I'm sure one of those is the upfront costs, maybe the financial viability of some of these higher level technologies. Can you describe sort of what you experience right now with the major roadblocks for these technologies grabbing a hold of our economy?
Well, the main one is cost. You put your finger right on it. The cost of utilizing energy the way we're used to doing it in our society is really inexpensive.
Mm-hmm.
I think that energy is one of the bargains in our society. That may be in a dozen eggs. We pay, even here in Northern California, where our electricity is expensive, we pay about 12 or 14 cents a kilowatt hour. That's enough electricity to run a laptop computer for 20 hours, and you can barely buy a stick of bubblegum for that. So energy is really cheap, and as long as it is really cheap, it's going to be difficult for these other technologies to gain a foothold. But things are changing. The cost of getting petroleum out of the ground is increasing all the time, and we're starting to recognize the dangers to our planet of business as usual. So I think that we're moving in the direction of utilizing these other technologies and being kinder to our planet.
So I know a lot of people tend to think we're moving from sort of a dirty carbon energy to a clean hydrogen energy future, and maybe have the idea that at some point we're going to have sort of a one size, you know, kind of cure all for our energy needs. But isn't it the case that our energy systems will be supplied by distributed and multiple forms of energy generation?
Oh, absolutely. And we're not going to stop using fossil fuels anytime soon. They're available, they're inexpensive, and there are a lot of people on Earth who still don't have access to reliable energy, reliable electricity, and it really makes our lives healthier and more enjoyable, more comfortable. So it's going to take a long time, and it's going to take all technologies on deck. We're going to have to use all these things to transition from where we are now to where we need to go to have a sustainable energy system.
And Peter, fortunately, we are in an area that has innovators like yourself working on these issues and doing research on these issues. And I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about the RESCO process, first by introducing that acronym, because it's such an awful acronym. Could you tell us a little bit about what RESCO stands for?
You think it's awful? I think it's great. RESCO stands for Renewable Energy Secure Communities, and it's a California Energy Commission plan to help communities transition from fossil fuel energies to a renewable energy economy.
Now that's interesting. When you say RESCO, it reminds me you should be shopping at RESCO or go buy your car at RESCO. It doesn't seem to me like a very good description.
No, we should change our energy system using RESCO.
There you go. Now I'm sold.
We're partnered with the Redwood Coast Energy Authority in this project where we're developing a plan for getting Humboldt County to a renewable energy future. And we are in an interesting situation here in Humboldt County. We're kind of an energy island. We're remote. We're only tenuously connected to the national electricity grid with one line that goes from here to the Central Valley. We have a little bit of natural gas here on the North Coast, but we import most of our natural gas. We import all of our petroleum from the Bay Area. So we are somewhat of an energy island. Meanwhile, we're blessed with an enormous renewable energy potential. We have biomass. We live in a forest. And we have a good wind resource. Shell Wind is interested in the process of developing wind on Bear River Ridge outside of Ferndale. And we have an enormous wave energy potential. And I know that PG&E just pulled the plug on their Wave Connect project, which was going to test wave devices off our coast, but that's going to happen someday. The conditions just weren't right at this time to go forward with that project, but that's going to happen someday. At any rate, we have these big three renewable energy sources, and we are an energy island. So we have a real opportunity here to develop them for our electricity, for our transportation, and for our heat, and to be a pioneer, to show our state, our country, the world, that we can get a very large fraction of our energy from renewable sources. And in our case, local sources, which makes it more secure and makes the price more dependable.
Well, that sounds great, Peter. One of the things that we've been talking about today is innovation, and an important aspect of innovation is education. And I know that the Schatz Lab works both with college students at HSU and elsewhere, but with younger students going out in community outreach. Could you talk a little bit about maybe how you're trying to foster innovation and education in the community?
Well, we do a lot of outreach at local educational fairs, and we go out to classrooms. We bring classroom students here to the lab and to see our projects. We're involved in a couple of educational projects. These are for somewhat older students than you mentioned, high school students and college students, to bring hydrogen and fuel cell energy topics into their classrooms. what you find is that if students are studying something that is happening, that is a now thing that's happening in their world, they get much more interested in studying chemistry or physics or all the other underlying principles that go with the technologies. And we found that to be the case.
Yeah, I think the idea of project-based learning or hands-on learning that excites students and engages their natural curiosity is something that is shown to be really effective.
And so, Peter, it seems the RESCO process has some attempt, in other words, to do some outreach to the community and to pull in stakeholders from the community to participate in this process. It's not just a bunch of pointy heads sitting in a laboratory up on campus telling us how things are going to go. It sounds very different.
In a week from Thursday, we have our first stakeholder meeting, and it's going to be in Eureka, and we're probably going to have 50 or 60 leaders of the local community from all different walks of life.
And can you tell us more about the details? So Thursday the 18th?
Yeah, it's by invitation only. It's not open to the public at this point.
Okay.
And we have sent the invitation, so it's not a general meeting. There will be opportunities for the public to comment later down the line, but this is our first stakeholder meeting. And it'll be in Eureka, and for 3 hours, we'll be listening to people and getting their input on our ideas and our plans. And hopefully we can mobilize the whole community to do this. We're pretty, first of all, enthusiastic, and second of all, optimistic that we can do this. I mean, the North Coast has always had a kind of independent streak, and renewable energy has a lot of support up here. So we're pretty confident we can make this work.
So we touched a few minutes ago on some of the challenges with a transition to renewable, say, hydrogen economy, but it seems like we might experience some of the same resistance from perhaps utilities, perhaps regulatory constraints that might prevent us from a renewable energy secure future for Humboldt County. Can you talk a little bit about what some of those challenges are and maybe some of the stakeholders that might be coming to work through those?
Well, we realized early on that we couldn't do this without the support of our investor-owned utility, PG&E. And PG&E is the 800-pound gorilla in this world. And unless they're on our side, this isn't going to work. And so we engaged them early on. They're a project partner, and they've been cooperative. You know, they often don't have a good reputation in the community because they're a big corporation, but they've been cooperative, and it is in their interest to develop renewable energy. I mean, they are mandated to have a certain fraction of their energy come from renewable sources. There's a renewable portfolio standard in California, and they're looking for ways to increase the amount of renewable energy in their mix. So they have been cooperative, and I don't think they're going to be a barrier. Now, there's a long way from here to there, so there are still opportunities for barriers. The main barrier is going to be cost. The main barrier is going to be, how are we going to afford to do this? What kind of financing can we find? What kind of investors can we find? That, I think, is going to be the hardest thing to do. But as long as the laws stay on our side, I mean, fortunately, Proposition 23 went down. That certainly helped a lot. As long as the laws stay on our side, I think we can do it.
So, Peter, we have just a little bit of time left with you. I was hoping you could talk just a little bit about your brand spanking new building up there on the Humboldt campus.
Yeah, we're and this is back to Mr. Schatz. Some of the money he left us in his bequest when he died is being used to build a new lab and office building. Those of the listeners who know about us know that for 20 years we've been down in what's called the University Annex, which is the old Trinity Hospital, which is kind of falling apart, to be kind. And we are building a new building. I can see it from where I'm sitting. It's about 200 yards away from here on the campus, right across the street from the new BSS building. And it's going to more than double our space, and it's a really nice facility. It'll probably be open in January of this year, and we are very much looking forward to moving and getting set up there.
What will that facility enable you to do that you can't do now, for example? Obviously, working more comfortably is one thing, but it seems like you've been limited, in, as you mentioned, at your current location. And so the new facility will enable you to do what, do you think?
Well, we're going to have a much bigger shop to build things. We're going to have a bigger lab to do experiments. We're going to have an outdoor laboratory so we can do things like biomass energy experiments that can't be done inside. One of the first things we're going to work on is we're working with a startup company in the Bay Area that has a torrefier. Torrefaction is a process of taking biomass, mostly wood waste, and making it into an energy-dense material, sort of like making charcoal, but a more high-tech and better way to make it. And it then becomes, they call it biocoal, it becomes a material that can be used to co-fire with wood or coal in a power plant. And it's a way that it would make it easier to get biomass out of the forest and into an energy-generating plant.
And I know a lot of the listeners to the EcoNews report might be interested to know what some of the forest impacts could be. We speak of biomass as forest resource, but a lot of our listeners, and myself included, would be concerned about the impact of those forests. Can
Absolutely.
You talk a little bit about how that might not impact our forests?
Well, there's going to be a lot of biomass available from just using our forests the way we do now. That is, we do logging in the national forests, and there are there's slash from the logging efforts, and there's waste from the sawmill that is all has good energy content. And then there's going to be a huge, in the next few decades, there's going to be a huge fuel reduction effort in our forests because, as you know, we suppress fires for a long time. And when fires occur now, they're much more destructive because of the fuel loading in the forest. So there's an effort to do fuel reduction in the forest, and that's going to provide a lot of otherwise low-quality biomass, but it could be used for energy if we found an economical way to get it out of the forest, and that's what we want to do. So we're not talking about clear-cutting forests for energy. We're talking about using what would ordinarily be available from the forest as an energy product.
Peter, thank you. I think we now need to let you get back to innovating our energy future. I know the future can't wait for you, but we appreciate your being with us today.
Thanks a lot. I enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you, Peter.
Thanks
Bye-bye.
Very much. Bye.
So the best part of innovation is hearing from our audience. We'd like to discuss future shows and solicit feedback for what people would like to hear in terms of format, topics, and people to talk to. Who are the people out there in our community that we like to learn from, that you think are inspirational? Those are the ideas that we want to hear about. You can send those comments by email to Narum, N-A-R-U-M, at greenwaypartners.net. Once again, N-A-R-U-M at greenwaypartners.net. Okay, well, you've been listening to the EcoNews Report. We've been your hosts, Kirk Cahoon and David Narum. We've been speaking today with Peter Lehman of the Schatz Energy Research Center. If you have questions or comments about this program, please call our listener comment line at 826-6089. The EcoNews Report is produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University, in cooperation with the North Coast Environmental Center. Thanks to our engineer, Fred McLaughlin. Join us again next Thursday at 1:30 here on KHSU and KHSR.